4.
Alba Sedge woke up in the best possible way. She surfaced with a languorous slowness through fuzzy layers of luxurious half-dreams and memories of sweetness, sensuality, and sheer carnal bliss. To find it all merging rather splendidly into reality, and what was happening right now. She toyed with the idea of pretending she was still asleep. But then he must have just touched exactly the right spot, and she couldn't help making a noise and moving and clenching. And so she rolled over and took his face in her hands and kissed it. "Oh, no," she croaked, laughing. "Don't stop. That's a fine way to say good morning." "Nearly afternoon," the young man breathed. He was called a tile. He was tall and very dark-skinned, and he had fabulously blonde hair, and a voice that could raise bumps on your skin at 100 meters, or better still, millimeters. Metaphysics student, swam a lot and free-climbed, the one she'd set her heart on the previous evening, the leg-liker. Long, sensitive fingers.
Really? Well, you know, maybe you can say that later, but meantime, you just keep right on.
What? Alva's head jerked to a sitting position, eyes wide open. She slapped the young man's hand away and stared wildly around. She was in what she thought of as her romantic bed. It was more of a chamber, really. A ruched pavilion-ceilinged 5-meter crimson hemisphere, filled with billowy bolsters and slinky sheets, which blended into puffy paddings, forming the single wall of the chamber, and which swelled out in places to form various projections, shelves, straps, and little seat-like things. She had other beds. Her childhood bed, still stuffed with toys, her just-sleep bed, comfy and surrounded by nocturne plants. A huge, grandly formal and terribly old-fashioned canopied reception bed, for when she wanted to receive friends, and an oil bed, which was basically a 4-meter sphere of warm oils. You had to put little nose-plug things in, and the air was displaced into you. Not to everybody's taste, sadly, but very erotic. Her neural lace had woken up already with the adrenaline rush. It told her it was 30 to noon. Shit, she'd thought she'd set an alarm to wake her an hour ago. She'd meant to. Must have slipped her mind due to the fun. Hormonal reprioritization. Well, it happened.
What?
Atile said, smiling. He was looking at her oddly, like he was wondering whether this was part of some game. Twinkle in the eye, he reached out for her. Damn, the gravity was still on. She commanded the bed controls to switch to 1/10. Sorry, she said, blowing him a kiss, as the apparent gravity cut by 90%. The padding beneath their bodies suddenly had a lot less weight to support. The effect was to produce a very gentle padded pat on the bottom, which was enough to send them both floating fractionally upwards. He looked surprised. It was such a sweet, boyish, innocent expression. She almost stayed. But she didn't. She jumped out of the bed, kicking up through the air and raising her arms above her head to dive through the loose gatherings of the chamber's tented ceiling and out into the bedroom beyond, arcing out over the padded platform around the bedchamber and falling gently back into the clutches of its standard gravity. She ran down the curved steps to the bedroom floor and almost bumped into the drone shirt line. "I know," she yelled, flapping one hand at it.
It lifted out of her way, then turned smoothly and followed her across the floor of the bedroom towards the bathroom, its feels formal blue but tinged with a rosy humour. Alva broke into a run. She'd always liked big rooms. The bedroom one was 20 meters square and 5 high. One wall was a window. It looked out onto a tightly curved landscape of fields and wooded hills dotted with towers and ziggurats. This was interior space one, the central and longest cylinder of a cluster of independently revolving 5-kilometer diameter tubes, which formed the main living areas in the rock. "Anything I can do?" the drone asked, as Alva ran into the bathroom. Behind it there was a shout, and then a series of curses, as the young man tried to exit the bedchamber in the same way Alva had, and got the gravity transition wrong. The drone turned briefly towards the disturbance, then swiveled back as Alva's voice floated out through the noise of rushing fluids. "Well, you can throw him out. Nicely mined." "What?" Alva screamed. "You get me to ditch a luscious new guy after one night. You make me scrap all my engagements for a month. And then you won't even let me take a few pets or a couple of pals."
"Alva, can I talk to you alone?" Chert Lyon said calmly, rotating to point at a room off the main gallery.
"No, you can't," she yelled, throwing down the cloak she'd been carrying. "Anything you have to say to me, you can damn well say in front of my friends."
They were in the outer gallery of Ephetra, a long reception area lined with windows and old paintings. It looked out to the formal gardens and interior space one beyond. A couple of travel tubes waited beyond doors set into the wall full of portraits. She told everybody to rendezvous here. She'd missed the noon deadline by over an hour, but there were certain things about one's toilet that simply couldn't be rushed. And, as she told a briefly but fetchingly incandescently furious Chert Lyon from her milk bath, if she was really that important to all these top-secret plans, SC had no choice but to wait. As a concession to the urgency of the situation, she'd left her face unadorned, tied her hair back into a simple bun, and slipped into a conservatively patterned loose pants and jacket combination. Even choosing her jewelry for the day had taken no more than 5 minutes. The gallery had got quite busy. Her mother was there, tall and tousled in a jellaba, 3 cousins, 7 aunts and uncles, about 12 friends, all house guests, and a little bleary-eyed after the graduation party, and a couple of house-slave drones attempting to control the animals, a brace of tawny spatelid hunters looking about at everybody and snuffling and slavering with excitement, and her 3 hooded but still restless Alsanes, which kept stretching their wings and giving their piercing, plangent cry. Another drone waited outside the nearest window with Brave, her favourite mount, saddled up and pawing the ground, while the 3 drones she decided were the minimum she could manage with were taking care of her luggage trunks, which were still appearing from the house lift. A tray floated at her side with breakfast. She just started munching on a chisel and segment when the drone had told her she had to make this journey alone. Chert Lyon didn't reply in speech. Instead, astonishingly, it spoke through her neural lace. "Alva, for pity's sake, this is a secret mission for special circumstances, not a social outing with your girlfriends." "And don't secret talk me," Alva hissed through clenched teeth. "Grief, that's so rude."
"Quite right, dear. muttered her mother, yawning. A couple of her friends laughed lightly. Chertline came right up to her until it was almost touching her, and then, the next thing she knew, there was a sort of grey cylinder around her and the machine. It stretched from wooden floor to stone-carved ceiling, and it was about a metre and a half in diameter, neatly enclosing her, Chert, and the tray carrying breakfast. She stared at the drone, her mouth open, eyes wide. It had never done anything like this before. Its aura field had disappeared. It hadn't even had the decency to square the field and put the field on a mirror finish. At least she could have checked her appearance. "Sorry about this, Alva," the machine said. Its voice sounded flat in the narrow cylinder. Alva closed her mouth and prodded the field the drone had slung around them. It was like touching warm stone. "Alva," the drone said again, taking one of her hands in a maniple field. "I apologize. I ought to have made the point earlier. I just assumed. Well, never mind. I'm supposed to come with you to Tyr, but not anybody else. Your friends have to stay here. But Pierce and I always go deep space together, and Clatsley is my new protege. I promised her she could stick around me. I can't just abandon her. Do you have any idea what that could do to her development, to her social life? People might think I've dumped her. Besides, she's got an utterly exquisite older brother. If I—" "You can't take them," the drone said loudly. "They're not included in the invitation." "I heard what you said yesterday, you know," Alva said, shaking her head and leaning forward at the drone. "Keep it secret. I haven't told them where we're going." "That's not the point. When I said don't tell a soul, I meant don't tell a soul you're going, not don't tell a soul exactly where you're going." She laughed, throwing her head back. "Chert, real space here. My diary is a public document. Hadn't you noticed? There are at least 3 channels devoted to me, all run by rather desperate young men, admittedly. But nevertheless, I can't change my eye color without anybody on the rock who follows fashion knowing about it within the hour. I can't just disappear. Are you mad? And I don't think the animals can come either," Chertline said smoothly, ignoring her question. "The Proterra certainly can't. There isn't room on the ship. Isn't room," she roared. "What size is this thing? Are you sure it's safe? Warships don't have stables, Alva. It's an ex-warship," she exclaimed, waving her arms around. "Oh!" She sucked at the knuckles she'd hit against the field cylinder. "Sorry, but still, what about my clothes? A cabin full of clothes is perfectly all right, though I don't know for whose benefit you're going to be wearing them." "What about when I get to Tyr?" she cried. "What about this guy I'm not supposed to fuck? Am I supposed to just wander past him naked? Take 2 rooms full, 3. Clothes are not a problem. And you can pick up more when you get there. Now, wait a minute. I know how long it takes you to choose new clothes. Just take what you want. 4 cabins, there. But, my friends, tell you what. I'll show you the space you've got to work with, okay?" "Oh, okay," she said, shaking her head and sighing heavily. The drone fed convincing-looking pictures of the ex-warship's interior into Alva's brain through the neural lace. She caught her breath. Her eyes were wide when the display stopped. She stared at the drone. "The rooms," she exclaimed. "The cabins, they're so small."
"Quite.
Still think you want to take your friends?"
She thought for a second.
"Yes," she yelled, thumping a fist on the little tray floating at her side. It wobbled, trying not to spill the fruit juice. "It'd be cozy. What if you fall out?"
That stopped her for a moment. She tapped her lips with one finger, frowning into space. She shrugged.
"I can cut people dead in a travel tube chart. I can ostracize people in this same bed."
She leaned towards the machine again, then glanced round at the grey walls of the field cylinder.
"I can ostracize people in something this big," she said pointedly, her hands on her hips. She put her head back, narrowed her eyes, and lowered her voice. "I could just refuse to go, you know."
"You could," the machine said with a pronounced sigh. "But you'd never get into contact. An SC would be forced to try and get a double, a synthetic entity, to impersonate this woman on Tyr. The authorities there wouldn't be amused if they found out."
She gazed levelly at the machine for a moment. She sighed and shook her head.
"Bugger," she breathed, snatching the glass of fruit juice from the floating tray, and looking in distaste at where the juice had run down the outside of the glass.
"I hate this acting adult shit."
She knocked the juice back, set the glass back down, and licked her lips.
"Okay, let's go. Let's go."
The goodbyes took a while. Chertline glowed greyer and greyer with frustration, until it turned into a sort of off-black sphere. Then it dropped its aura field altogether and sped out of the nearest opened window. It raced around in the air outside for a while. A couple of sonic booms nearly had the mounts bolting. Eventually, though, Alva had said her farewells, decided to leave all her animals and two trunks of clothes behind. And then, having remained serene in the midst of much hullabaloo and some tears from Clatsly, entered a travel tube with a frostily blue chert line, and was taken to the forward docks and a big brightly lit hangar, with a psychopath-class X-Rapid offensive unit frank exchange of views was waiting for her. Alva laughed.
"It looks," she snorted, "like a dildo."
"That's appropriate," Chertline said. "Armed, it can fuck solar systems." She remembered when she was a little girl, and had stood on a bridge over a gorge in one of the other interior spaces. She had a stone in her hand, and her mother had held her up to the bridge parapet, so that she could look over the edge and drop the stone into the water below. She'd held the stone, it was about the same size as her little fist, right up to one eye, and closed her other eye, so that the dark stone had blotted out everything else she could see. Then she'd let it go. She and Chertline stood in the ship's tiny hangar area, surrounded by her cases, bags, and trunks, as well as a deal of plain but somehow menacing-looking bits and pieces of military equipment. The way that stone had fallen towards the dark water then, shrinking and shrinking, was very like the way Phage Rock fell silently away from the old warship now. This time, of course, there was no splash. When Phage had entirely disappeared, she switched out of the view her neural lace had imported into her head and turned to the drone, thinking a thought that would have occurred to her a lot earlier, she hoped, if she'd been sober and unimpassioned over the last day. When was this ship sent to Phage Chert, and from where?
"Why don't you ask it yourself?" it said, turning to indicate a small drone approaching over the jumble of equipment. "Chat," she asked via the neural lace. "Yes." "Damn. I was hoping the ship's rep might be a dazzling, handsome young man. Instead, it's something that looks like a..." Chatline interrupted. "Alva, you are aware that the ship itself acts as exchange hub for these communications." "Oh, dear," she thought, and felt herself color as the little drone approached. She smiled broadly at it. "No offense," she said. "None taken," said the little machine, as it came to a halt in front of her. It had a reedy but reasonably melodious voice. "For the record," she said, still smiling and still blushing, "I thought you looked a bit like a jewelry box." "Could have been worse," chipped in Chertline. "You should hear what she calls me sometimes." The little drone snout dipped once in a sort of bow. "That's quite all right, Miss Sage," it said. "Delighted to meet you. Allow me to welcome you aboard the very fast pickets, Frank Exchange of Views." "Thank you," she said, also nodding slowly. "I was just asking my friend where you'd come from and when you'd been dispatched." "I didn't come from anywhere except Phage," the ship told her. She felt her eyes widen. "Really?" "Really," it said laconically. "And the answers to your next three questions, I guess, are... because I was very well hidden. And that's actually quite easy in a conglomeration of matter the size of Phage. Getting on for 500 years. And there's another 15 like me back home. I trust you are reassured rather than shocked, and that we may rely on your discretion in the future." "Oh, golly, absolutely," she said, nodding, and felt half inclined to click her heels and salute.